The shopping, the decorating, the music all cranking up around the holiday season. So are the holiday scams. It's a part of our life today. Tennessee Tech's Cybersecurity Education Research and Outreach Center is there to try to help. We continue our conversation with Eric Brown, the Associate Director. Brown says there are a lot of things that we can do individually to protect ourselves.
Don't live your life, all of it, on social media. There are people that divulge so much information. Yes, I can look at that and I can build a profile. I can become you online in a moment's notice. It's great to use, but be realistic what you share about yourself. I give you an example. I had an individual one time, their child got their driver's license. They took a picture of the child with the driver's license, right? I zoomed in on the picture, called the individual. I said, you have to take that post down now. Well, they got their driver's license. I said, yes. Would you like me to tell what her height, her weight, her eye color, her driver's license? And then he started, it's, oh.
Yep.
You know.
Even down to something simple like you're telling people you're out of town.
Exactly.
I mean which is a different selfie, kind of crime.
But. Selfie at the concert, enjoying the concert right now, translated to others. I'm not home. Please go rob me.
Yeah.
You know, so it's careful how you do that. And then the other thing, too, is we live more of our life on social media. Most social media providers now provide a way to use what's called two-factor authentication. So when I log in, it's going to text me back a six-digit code. And then to log in, to finish the login process, I need to enter that six-digit code. You have to turn that on. It's not on by default anymore. You know, I wish it were, but you need to turn that on because if somebody does get your password because you used Fluffy 123, they would still have to have the device that you were going to get the code on. That stops a breach of your social media account.
From what is cybercrime versus telephone crime versus the scams that we've had around in our culture for, as you said, Eric, for centuries. I want to ask you about one other one, and I have to admit this happened to me last week. Email from the bank.
Yes.
There's a problem with your account, and a year ago, let's say, you would get those kinds of emails, and you could look at the email account, and it would be, you know, chasebank@gmail.com. Well, of course, Chase Bank is not going to be using a Gmail account. This one was not. This one had a legitimate-looking email, and I found myself 2, 3, 4 times going back and saying, do I think this is real?
So a bank's never going to send out that through an email. They do not deal with your private information in an email. So that's the fact that you get that from your bank should be an alarm. also, you know, mentioning earlier, never use the link in the email. Go to the bank's website and check. Also, if there is any question in your mind about that, call your bank representative. They're going to talk to you and tell you. I mean, there is a bank in town right now that has experienced that issue, and there is this large banner when you log into their site that says, we will never, ever send you an email asking for your password or your private information. I mean, big banner up at the top because somebody was crafting some well-forged emails and making it look like a legitimate communication. The other popular scare this time of the year and going into January is going to be the IRS versions. Well, this is the IRS. You have this delinquent. You need to deal with this now. Really? The IRS can't even answer a normal response on time. They're going to be proactive and send you an email. Well, it's not going to happen. But I'm going to go back to the IRS website. I'm not going to click that link. So that's part of what we have to deal with. It's check the source. Be almost cynical. And I hate to say it that way. I don't mean as a negative, but maybe alert is a better word. Just be aware and alert.
And maybe it just comes down to what you said before, which is, just get in the habit of don't click on those things. Don't respond to the emails. Make a phone call. Go to the website of that organization, that bank, that nonprofit, that city of whatever, county of whatever. Just don't click on the links.
Yeah. And I don't. I've got to where I trust very little that I don't go directly to, you know. And, you know, that can happen. We've had emails come through. I mean, every organization has dealt with this where the email would be looking like it was from one of our superiors that would send, well, drop me your cell number. I've lost it. My dean's not going to ask me that. I know that. I know it's a scam. Now, did they take some time to make it look good? Of course they did. But my dean's not going to ask me for that.
And you answered an important question earlier, which is they only need one or two or three people
absolutely.
To do it.
Absolutely. And then sometimes if you are the one that provide the cell phone number, now you get to be the phone number that's used when they're calling other people because they're going to say it's from you. Because I had a gentleman one time call me very angry because my cell phone number had been picked up and used. And I said, sir, I'm sorry I've never called you. Well, yeah, I just talked to you. Sir, I'm sorry. It was a scam. Well, you need to fix that, sir. I'm sorry. I can't. I don't own the cell phone company. You know.
Eric Brown is with us. He is with the Cybersecurity Education Research and Outreach Center at Tennessee Tech. So much to talk about. We'll continue with Eric next. You need to fix that. You said that in the last segment. Eric Brown with us from Tennessee Tech as we talk cybersecurity and scams. How much is there on the books in terms of laws, in terms of penalties? Is that something that most of us even need to think about?
Okay, there are laws out there. The United States takes a very interesting approach to cyber law, where Europe, the European Union has, a government-based umbrella-like law that came from government down. The United States cyber law kind of developed in industry sectors and bubbled up. So it might have come up through the financial markets. It might have come up through the manufacturing market. So it's very industry aligned and somewhat siloed. There's not like the large comprehensive umbrella that Europe has. The closest thing we have to that in the United States is the California Consumer Protection Act. But there are laws. There are laws against stealing already before the cyber laws. There were laws against stealing and deception across interstate lines. We've had FCC, whatever regulations for years. All that being said, if my attacker, hacker, scammer, whatever term we want to give these individuals, is sitting in another country there, I mean, they don't care. We can pass 10,000 laws. So part of it is while there are laws there that can help us in certain circumstances, it's more of an effort of due diligence. It's going to be hard for, unless it's a huge ring, for the FBI or some group to go after somebody for $5 when they're looking at somebody scamming for $10 million. So while there are laws, part of it is due diligence. Part of it is making other people aware. And that's not to call law. I'm not saying do not call law enforcement. Make them aware of the scams going on so they can alert others. Don't let it be siloed and let 10 people have to deal with the same thing. Make it aware this is going on, and you can report it through appropriate channels. But at the end of the day, it becomes a factor of due diligence.
All right, let's get to some remedies for these scams and emails and phone calls and websites and all these crazy things that are going on with us. Eric Brown, Cybersecurity Education Research and Outreach Center at Tennessee Tech. You mentioned one a few moments ago, the two-factor authentication, which most of us have probably said, girl,
just another step to take up my time.
Something else I got to do. Why does that work?
So if I have a bad password or somebody's been able to guess my password for some reason, what two-factor authentication means is, just as it says, there's multiple factors before I'm going to be allowed access to a resource. If they guess my password but they don't have the device to get that code, I've stopped them from logging in. It's that simple. I've made them need two pieces of information rather than just one. One of them they can't get. One of them they can potentially guess. So that's the reason that's so beneficial. You know, the umbrella statement for that, what is the best cure for cybersecurity issues? Grandma's wisdom. That stuff you heard on the front porch from grandma that you ignored as a kid would solve 98% of our cybersecurity issues. Know who you're talking to. Mind what you're saying. Make sure that you are safely conducting things. So what does that mean practically? Multi-factor authentication, absolutely. It's easy to turn on, and yes, it's a text message, and yes, you have to type in an additional 6 digits. But that's a lot less interruptive than having to go through an identity theft cleanup that could take a year to a year and a half. Very simple thing to do. Two, what we've talked about already, be very vigilant in the emails and stuff. Use your services in safe places. What kills me is this, I see, and I'm not going to mention a retail name. Don't go into that place to grab your hot beverage and use free Wi-Fi. Okay? Free Wi-Fi is exactly what it is. And then you've got the creepy dude hanging out in the corner sniffing everything you're doing because it's free unsecured Wi-Fi. Don't do your banking there. You've got a home. You do your banking at home. You know, there are activities that because we're mobile now that we do in the most insecure places. You know, you don't count your money out in the middle of town. You count it at the house. That's what grandma said, right? Do your critical things at home on a network you trust, not out in the public. Avoid free Wi-Fi like the plague. Assume it is hostile because it is 98% of the time. Conduct business with the same diligence that you would if the technology were not involved. Now, what do I mean by that? If I go into a store to buy a product, I'm going to look at the product, I'm going to check the product, I'm going to pay for it. Make sure, because I've done some steps to validate that purchase, make sure before you're purchasing online that you know who the vendor is. The vendor has a trusted record. They have a safe mechanism by which I can pay this individual and go through those means. And then watch and make sure that the charge was done correctly. Just like you count the change when you get the change back.
We're talking about the world we live in and the cybersecurity risk. And again, cybersecurity doesn't mean you're on your computer late at night looking at places that you didn't need to be looking. It means you're checking the sports scores or you're buying a gift for your loved ones for the Christmas holidays. Eric Brown is our guest. I'm sure you get asked this all the time. How do you keep up with passwords?
Okay, so what I normally tell people, and I tell my family this too, because I you know, when you become the family nerd,
You're that person?
Yeah, you get on a lot of people's nerves. They make password managers now. Some of them are free. I don't use free ones because if they're free, nobody's really paying attention to it. But there are some password managers that are paid for services now that can be very helpful with that. Many times the companies are providing antivirus, anti-malware packages for your computer and your mobile devices will also provide a password manager as a comprehensive solution. Take advantage of that. When you have a password, stash it in that manager. If you've got a security question you're needing to keep up with it in that manager, but make sure that it is a paid-for product that you know the company.
Do you have advice for passwords in terms of how often you use the same one, you know, things that might help someone in terms of things that they can easily remember?
Unfortunately, what we're finding out, because of human nature, there's no such thing as a good password. There are passwords that are better than others. Password 123 is still one of the most popular passwords out there. Bless our heart. And, you know, folks in the South know exactly what that means. But what is trending now are a lot of companies are talking about. Google just had an article out about this the other day. Companies are wanting you to get rid of passwords. So, well, that doesn't make sense. I have to have a password to protect things. Well, they're wanting to move to things like passphrases. So they're longer. They have meaning to you, but they're not going to have meaning to something else. They're not going to be so easy to guess. So they're looking at past phrases that would make them more complex. That's one layer. Also, there are devices now that I can use that can substitute for passwords. So I can do pass keys. So like the YubiKeys and other things like that, where instead of typing a password, I'm plugging in a device long enough for it to grab an identifier that it's matched, which is, again, more secure as long as I keep up with the YubiKey, obviously, that can help. You know, some government computers and some companies will do what they call CAC cards, which is basically an RFID card that I slide into the side of the computer to log in. So some of those things can be much better. So, you know, you're not going to go out and buy the fancy cards, but maybe I use a more sophisticated passphrase. Obviously, we always tell people on passwords, don't use the same password for every service you have. And then you say, well, that adds complexity. I'm going to forget one of them. How is that going to help me? Well, the balance on that is, am I using the password managers we've talked about? That can help with that to some degree. But also making my passphrases longer. And then also going back with that two-factor authentication. So it's a layering process. One of the things in security we always teach, security, good security, is layered. Because there's no such thing as a perfect layer that's going to protect me against everything.
Eric Brown is our guest from Tennessee Tech.